There's a famous marshal from Rabbanim of Shisla who used to give to explain what it's like to daven during the Aseret Metshuva to get to that point. I updated a little bit and I made it into a story for my kids. So I told it to them at night two nights ago. And I think it's a little bit more modern, but it fits the idea of what Rabbanim wanted to say, if I have the audacity to say such a thing. A very wealthy man had a child who was absolutely spoiled rotten. He gave the kid everything. I mean, all the money that kid wanted, he gave it to him. Any present, any toy, anything that came out in the market, this kid had. This was such a wealthy man that it didn't make a dent in his fortune. The kid wanted a roller coaster, he got a roller coaster in the backyard. The kid wanted a little car to go around with, he got a car for him to go around with. Everything that he had, he gave over to the kid, and the kid had... But he didn't appreciate it. The kid never said thank you. He never looked at his father and said, I appreciate what you gave me. Nothing. He just sort of took it and then expected more and more. And every time the father tried to give him a little bit more, the kid still took it and said to himself, you know what? My father could have given me something a little bit better, and even treated his father badly after he gave it to him. The servants of the household, the different people, the cooks, the waiters, everybody that was around, the kid treated like absolute garbage, as if they didn't exist. And if they did exist, they only existed to serve him, nobody else in the house, and didn't have anything else to do with their time. He would yell at them, he would scream at them, he'd throw food at them, he'd make them do things for him that nobody normal would ask them to do, just silly things that didn't have anything to do. The truth is, he never thought about the results of his actions or anything that he, you know, anything that what he was doing, it didn't matter. Nothing mattered. He went to school, but he could care less about school. He knew he was the heir of an extremely massive fortune. He knew that if he just took all of his toys and sold them, he'd be an extremely wealthy person, let alone what his father was giving him all the time and what his father would give him once he died. There was no problem. What did he need to go to school for? So every tutor that was brought in to try to tutor him, he didn't listen. Every class that he tried to get something out of, nothing whatsoever. What does he need to know this stuff for? It doesn't matter. I'm rich for the rest of my life. I really couldn't care less. And he didn't listen to anyone, didn't care about anything. The schools were reluctant to kick him out. They graduated him without really considering what this kid actually did, because they knew they wanted the father on their side, and frankly, they didn't want the kid to be held back another year. They didn't want to have to take care of him for another year. Why bother with this? When he started to put him into a little bit of work to see what he would do in the workforce, maybe this kid is just not a studious kid, maybe once he gets to the workforce and he starts getting that type of money, maybe something's going to be a little bit better. But once he went out into the workforce, it's the exact same thing. He's just a spoiled brat that was being given everything. So when he sat there and he sat down in his office, he decorated his office with the greatest things you can imagine, made his office 10 times better than what his father's office is, and then told everybody else to do his work, and he did absolutely nothing. He never tried, never did anything at all. So the father is at a complete loss. He has no idea what to do with this kid. This kid really should be a great kid. He's my son. I know he has my chokmah that I gave him, right? He has a tremendous amount of wisdom. But what do you do with such a kid? So he thought and he thought and he thought about it. And he said to himself, the best thing for this kid is for him to be cut off completely. Have nothing to do with me. See, if he's reliant upon my money, my power, and everything I have, this kid's always going to be this way. But if I cut him off, and I take him away for X number of years, let's say 30 years, this kid's going to have to learn what it's like to be without me. So he sat his son down, explained to him what was going to happen, and then brought in his private jet. Took the kid in the private jet, kicking and screaming. Brought him inside that private jet, closed the doors on him, had the private jet go off. They brought the child to a backward island with a bunch of people, just Aborigine people that lived in that island, have been living in that island for years and years and years. They had nothing there, no electricity, no real modern anything. And this kid was being dropped off on this island. It's a beautiful island. Tremendous forest, tremendous everything. There was some great stuff there. But he's among people that he'd never seen before. People that he couldn't understand their language, couldn't understand what they were doing. Absolutely nothing. A primitive world. A world that he couldn't even deal with. And he said, I'm dropping you off here, and I'm making you live the rest of your life in that area. So they did it. Private jet brought him to that island, brought him over to that area, to a remote area, threw him off. Kid tried to run back to the helicopter. He said, absolutely not, you're not coming back. They closed up the doors, took the helicopter out. There's no way off this island. He doesn't know the longitude, latitude. He has no idea where he is. There's absolutely no idea where he is. And he goes around and he sees that there's natives of the island. The natives of the island, these backward people that are around there, are working really, really hard. So he goes over and he treats them the same way he treats his own servants. He goes over and he says, you're going to do this for me, and you're going to do this for me, and you're going to do that for me. Well, these guys did not take that kindly. So they went up to the kids, they tied them up, right? Started throwing things at them, started yelling at them, started screaming at them. The kid had no idea what to do. In order to survive, he realized that he was going to have to do something a little bit different. So he kindly, calmly told the people, let me down, let's work together, let's figure this out. Though there was the language barrier, there were other issues that were at hand here, but finally he found a way to communicate, and then alone lived there. But he still was not like one of them. I mean, he's that the white guy from the middle of nowhere. These are the guys that are the natives of this island. These people are going to be a little bit different. They're treating him a little bit differently than they always thought. This guy's never going to be one of ours. But he tried really hard, and he knew his father's not coming for him for 30, 40 years, whoever knows. He said, at first, he's thinking, like, maybe he'll come today, maybe he's going to feel bad, maybe he's going to send his helicopter, but when he saw that for days, for weeks, for months, he's not coming, he started getting himself used to the routine of these islands. He started working the same way the other people were. He started doing things exactly the same way the other people were doing things. He started working with them to be able to see, like, well, I have to be there, right? I have to do what they're doing. He acclimated himself to the society that he was in, and he found himself not any different from the people around him. He started getting a little bit darker, right, to look like the regular people of the island itself. He came like that. I don't want anybody to think this is a racist type of joke. I mean more like because they're out in the sun all the time, so let's get that out of our heads, right? But he became very suntanned, almost like the other people of the island. He started wearing the same clothes instead of the regular clothes that he had from his father, all these rich clothes out there. He started wearing the same palm fronds and everything else that the people of the island were wearing. His body started working out. It started looking like, you know, he actually looked like the other people of the island. His hair, he grew the same way. He looked, everything was the same to the point where the islanders couldn't tell the difference between him and them. And if they didn't know that this guy came from the middle of nowhere, right, and walked into the island, they would have thought that this guy had always been born there. He'd always been with them the entire time. There's no difference. And as time went on, he found himself to be more resourceful than he ever thought he would be. He became one of their top leaders. He became a chief advisor. He became one of those people that everybody wanted. Everybody wanted to marry their daughter off to this guy. They ended up saying, this guy is one of the greatest guys in our entire group. Everybody's there. Meanwhile, the wealthy man had not forgotten his son. He never did. He always had an eye on him and had video surveillance throughout the entire island. Wherever this kid went, there was a video that was following him that was seeing every single thing that he was doing. There were many times where the son came very close to death, to terrible situations that he wouldn't be able to get himself out of. And at that time, the wealthy man had people in the forest, had people on the island that were hiding, that wouldn't show themselves, that were there just in the nick of time to be able to save this son, his favorite son, from having that happen to them. There were agents everywhere, and then the agents would fall back into the foliage of the forest. They wouldn't be seen by anybody, right? And they went back whenever they were necessary, they were there for him, but when they weren't necessary, the son never knew that they even existed, that they were even there. They were just there taking care of whatever it was. When the man, the wealthy man, saw that his son had turned into a completely different person, this is not the son that I sent down there. He's resourceful. He works hard. He knows what he's doing now. He's trying to make himself better and better every single day. He really wants something good. He wants to make something out of his life. When he saw that, he said, it's time. It's time. I want to bring my son back. I miss him so much. I haven't seen him for years. It hasn't been 30 years yet, but it's been a long time. I feel like he's finally changed. He's finally there. He's ready for it. I miss him. I want him to come back. But I did say 30 years. So here's the deal. I'm going to send an agent over to my son, and I'm going to tell him that I'm ready to take you back. I'm ready. But I need you to want it. So what is the agent going to say to the kid? Sends over the agent to the kid, and the agent says, your father remembers you. Your father would like to grant you one wish. You can ask for anything you want. What do you want? That's the end of the message. The kid receives the message from the agent, and he thinks for a little bit. This is an older, wiser young man. And he thinks, and he says to himself, tell my father that I am grateful for his concern. And the truth is, the only thing I really need is a nice, warm, fur-lined coat to be able to protect me for the winters. Tell him to send me that, and everything should be okay. Now the father is watching this in his video surveillance camera, sees the exchange, hears what his son says back. Can you imagine the heartbreak of the wealthy man hearing that that's what his son wants? Kid, you could have asked for anything in the world. You could have asked for me to forgive you. You could have asked for a free plane trip home, for a helicopter trip home. You could have asked for all of my riches, all of the wealth, everything in the world would have been yours. That is all you had to do. All you had to do was just ask for it. And you asked for a coat, that's all you did. A fur-lined coat to stay where you are, live among all these backward native people, instead of going to a civilized country with everybody else. That's what you want. He's so upset. How could this son have asked for something like that? All he could think of was a coat. Dude, this hurts me, tshuva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to say, Abba, we want to come home. We want to be forgiven. We want to have a relationship with you again. We haven't had that in so long. We have no idea what it's even like anymore. We don't know what it means. We have no idea. But instead, we think to ourselves, we need more money. We need a nicer car. We need a nicer house. We need a better situation for ourselves in the bad situation that we're in. We're totally, completely missing the point. We're asking for a coat when we shouldn't be asking to live among savages. We should be asking to live on our own with people who understand what life is all about. Let's get ourselves in a different situation. That's Rav Banav Shizkla's story. He didn't have the jet. The point of slichos, the point of anything that we do now, is to analyze ourselves, everything we do, over the next 10 days of the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, and to say to ourselves, what is it that we really want? What are we really looking for? Do we want to improve the situation that we're in, the negative situation that we're in now, or do we want a completely different situation? Do we want something that's completely different? See, there are different minhagim. The Sfardim, they have a preparation that starts from Rosh Chodesh Elul that goes all the way to Yom Kippur. For 40 days, corresponding to the days that Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, they work on themselves and work on themselves that they can come out with the second pair of luchos at the end of all 40 days. Ashkenazim, we don't need that much preparation. We sit there for 4 days before Rosh Hashanah starts. For 4 days, we're mevaker ourselves, looking for mumen, seeing the same way that an animal that has a mum needs that type of decor to check out exactly what it needs. So we have 4 days beforehand. But even according to Ashkenazim, the prevailing minhag is that we don't just do 4 days. We wait until the Motzei Shabbos before, as long as it's more than 4 days beforehand, which gets a little confusing. So when Rosh Hashanah comes out to be a Sunday night Monday, so we start the Motzei Shabbos before that, a week before that. So it's a little bit more than 4 days. You start a little bit more than 4 days. That minhag is for one simple reason. You gotta have a Shabbos in there. You put in a Shabbos right before you do Slichos for two reasons. Number one, really easy to stay up late that night. Because you slept a little bit, you got yourself all rested, you're there. But number two, and the more important thing, you can think things through a little bit clearer. Think of what Shabbos is like for you. Think of what it is. It's no longer where you're bothered by the fact that you have to worry about what's going on in life around you. It's no longer that you're connected to everything else that the rest of the world is connected to. You're sitting with a family, with few people that you like, hopefully. And you're sitting there and you're eating good food. You're sitting around and you're having a microcosm of the Olam Shekulo Shabbos, of what Olam Haba is supposed to be like. Where there's no problems, where it's all good, where you can see you're just eating and drinking and enjoying and relaxing and learning a little bit, getting a little bit of Torah inside your system, where you're spiritually reconfiguring yourself so that you can get yourself to the point where you would want this for more. You sit there on a Shabbos and you know you're saying Slichos that night and you get yourself ready and you say, where am I heading? What am I doing? What do I want Slichos for? To get myself to this. This is what I want. No pressures, no worries, just a world where it's Kulo Shabbos.
That's the Ashkenazic minhag, to go from Shabbos into Slichos, to get yourself ready for what we're really preparing for, and what we really should be asking for a future in which I don't have to remain in the position that I'm in. For I could finally get everything I want, and not just one thing that I want. You could ask for a coat. It's going to protect you. It's going to help you during that time, but you're totally missing the point. That's not what it's all about. That's not the idea. We spoke last week about preparing ourselves during the year to get to the point where when our Father calls upon us, and He makes that Gilui Shechina, that 1 second in Rosh Hashanah, where the shofar blast goes off and everything's ready, that 1 second comes in, and then all of a sudden that Kadosh Baruch Hu comes and says, I'm here, I'm ready, are you ready for me? We said that you should prepare yourself to the point where, when that Kadosh Baruch Hu comes to you, you say, yes, I'm ready, I'm here. And sometimes you don't need that much preparation. Yishmael didn't need a preparation. Yishmael was ready for it, just like that. And he said, I'm ready, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's Basher Hushal. Not worried about the past, not worried about the future. It's where I am right now. I'm a Kli, I'm a receptacle, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to do this. Slichos are really hard. They're really hard. If you don't get what you're saying, and you're dealing with poetry, and you don't really want to do them because it's taking off 15 more minutes of your sleep, which is difficult. And I've noticed how people have walked in after Slichos and just come for Shacharis itself. I've noticed how people have been asking if they can go at night because they're up anyway and things like that. You're not ready for Rosh Hashanah yet. Yes, it's going to take a lot out of you. Yeah, it's going to be something that's difficult and annoying. But if you're expecting to say, Abba, I want to go home in a few days' time, we're dealing with less than a week now. You're going to have to prepare yourself by losing a little bit of sleep. By losing something that you really hold dear to know that I need to have that relationship. It doesn't come easy. None of your relationships in life have come easy. Parents have not come easy. Siblings does not come easy. I'm telling you right now, your wife is not going to come easy. And even your kids who idolize you and think of you as a god, lowercase or uppercase G, depending on what kind of... Me, I'm an uppercase G. But for everybody else, I don't know, lowercase G. Even so, it's difficult to have that relationship and to constantly deal with your kids and your wife and to understand that there's give and take and there's always something there. Relationships are a constant, constant challenge. It always is. It always will be. Our relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu is no different. It's a constant challenge. I'm expecting this and I end up getting this. He's expecting that, and he ends up getting that. It's a constant challenge. It's a give and take. You work with it. You work with it. You try to build yourself up. But you have a goal. That goal is to the point where you say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to go home. I'm done with this. I want to go home. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't know what it's going to entail. All I know is, home is awesome. Home, there's a blueberry pie that's sitting right there. Or cherry pie or pecan pie, and I'm sitting there, it was just baked, and you sit down and Kadosh Baruch Hu is pulling it out of the oven, right, and he puts it down in front of you and he slices it for you and says, here, have a piece of cake, or it's a pie, have a piece of pie, and you're so into it. That's the picture, the image that you should have in your head. Just don't ask for a coat. Have a good week, everybody.